Welcome into the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host of the Push Accept Podcast, Ben Brennan. So joined today by Donnie Miller. How are you doing, Donnie?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing good. How was your first week and a half of baseball treating you?
Pretty good so far. I do own Willie Calhoun on almost every team, so, you know, the Rangers have screwed me on that.
The Rangers suck, so let's just put it out there, because there's no Rangers fans on this podcast.
Fair enough.
Oh, I guess we're also joined today by Colin Weatherwax. How are you doing, Colin?
I'm doing all right, you know, being granted that I am a Rangers fan, so, you know, it's tough times, but we'll get through it just like we always do.
As long as you don't bring up Billy Hamilton.
I can't make any promises.
And today we're also joined by Matt. I guess we should call you Matt Smata, basically, because everyone else refers to you as Smata. This is your first podcast, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, Smata works. I don't really go by Matt too much out there, other than FWFB. But yeah, so happy to be on.
And you actually spell your name with one T, you know, which will spark a conversation of Colin spelling his name with one L and Donnie spelling his name with Y. So that will make for some interesting topic conversations.
I do have a question, Smata. Where does that name originate from, Smata?
The last name, it's Adam spelled backwards.
Okay. All right. I can dig it.
That makes so much sense. I'm surprised I never would have ever figured that out on my own, though.
I'm sure anagrams aren't your specialty, Ben.
But that's not really an anagram.
It's the definition of an anagram.
No, it's not. Don't worry about it. No, anagrams are not my specialty. You know, I have too many other stuff in the world to deal with outside of anagrams. I'm sorry. I'm just too busy with my life and being in first place in the Invitational to worry about anagrams. So, also on every podcast we seem to have. So I got a lot of work to do. Donnie, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter before we get started?
It's at Donnie Miller FWFB. I'm not going to spell it this time.
There you go. Making improvements every single week. What about you, Colin?
At CWeatherwax13. Don't have to spell it. Just sound it out and you'll make it.
And Smata, what about you?
Yep, at Smata _BB.
And I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. Today on the Push Accept podcast, we have a few trades to talk about. So our first trade that we're going to be talking about is Kristen Yelich for Anthony Rendon. This is in a league that you get 6 keepers, 10 teams. It's a head-to-head, and total bases is a factor. So why don't we start with you, Colin. What are your thoughts on Yelich for Rendon?
I think long-term, I would definitely prefer Yelich. I know it sucks that he's on the DL right now, but being that he's younger and he also plays – I mean, they both play in a great lineup, but – you know, Rendon, if I'm keeping him next year, I'm a little bit worried about the offense that's going to be around him, with Bryce Harper possibly moving on. And with Yelich, you know, he's in a great ballpark for lefty power, and he's also surrounded by a great lineup as of now. So I think you kind of have to, base this trade off of being a keeper and also playing the long term. And I think when Yelich comes back, he'll still provide you with everything that he's shown so far. I mean, he's already got a homer, 5 RBIs. He's hitting .385, so you know he's going to sustain that the rest of the year. So I'll definitely take the Yelich side.
In regards to your question or statement about the lineups, don't you have to believe that a lineup that consists of Daniel Murphy, even if he is a little bit banged up at times, but Daniel Murphy, Trey Turner, Adam Eaton, potentially Ryan Zimmerman, a player like Victor Robles, and potentially whoever could get signed during the offseason to play either maybe first base or outfield for them. Don't you think that that could still be a pretty potent lineup considering what the Brewers have with them going to do everything they can to move on from Ryan Braun. Eric Thames, we'll see how he finishes out his second year. We'll see if they like Domingo Santana enough to keep him. Obviously, you got Kane over there as well. But, you know, players want to see exactly what Travis Shaw can bring. Same with Jonathan Villar and everyone else that they have. So is there really more expectancy from of having a better lineup in Milwaukee than in Washington?
I don't think for this year. I think it's basically a push for this year. Granted, both of them stay healthy enough to play 145 to 150 games. But moving forward in a keeper league, I want to be sure that I'm set up for success for the long run. And just the fear of that team kind of falling apart in Washington, because once Bryce Harper goes, their window of contention is going to shrink. I know Robles has this great prospect pedigree, but we all know how prospects, you know, it might take him some time to develop, and he's dealing with a hyperextended elbow, so that might set him back a little bit in his progression. So for Yelich, I think in the ballpark that he plays in, also in the division, he doesn't have to face the Mets whenever they're healthy, all their aces. So I'm going to lean towards Yelich. I know the outfield is a bigger position for fantasy, but I'm still going to lean towards him and hope that he can provide, you know, everything that he's shown moving forward for my team.
And what about you, Donnie? What are your thoughts on this trade? Because I'm pretty sure this involves you.
Yeah, it does. Colin's a little bit biased, and I'm probably a little bit biased. I do love Anthony Rendon, and Colin loves Christian Yelich, but I think Rendon has a little bit more upside given the little bit more power he does have. And as long as he does stay healthy, everything else should be pretty close. But you're getting that little bit more power from third base instead of outfield. It is only a 10-teamer, and I'm pretty sure it's three outfielders, so that also should play a pretty big part in it. I know we all just think Bryce Harper's leaving, but isn't there a chance he could stay?
Probably not.
Like, you can't put a 0% chance, right?
0.1.
Yeah, you have 0.1. He's basically insinuating that he would like to go get as much money as he can. So and we basically know Washington won't pay that money. They just have too much money tied up with other players, and they're not going to go above $250 million, I would guess, for him.
I mean, but they did pay Scherzer that crazy contract. I mean,
but they paid Scherzer that crazy contract before they had to pay any other players a huge contract. There's a difference between paying Scherzer that, Strasburg that, Harper that, having to pay Trey Turner, or having to pay Rendon that in a couple of years, having Daniel Murphy make a good amount of money. You'll have Ryan Zimmerman, who's still making a decent amount of money. Gio Gonzalez. So, I mean, there's enough players there that will make a good amount of money, and having Scherzer there in his fourth season, you know, players will have gone through the arbitration and stuff, so it's going to be tougher to keep him at potentially $300 to $400 million amount compared to when he was only making a few million dollars 4 years ago, 3 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that it's. I mean, I'm just saying that there's got to be a little bit of a chance at least. Like we just determined that he's already leaving. There's got to be at least a little 5% chance.
Even if he leaves, I personally still like the Washington lineup, I think, a little bit more than I like the Milwaukee lineup, which is why I posed a question to Colin. So that's my thought. But Ms. Smata, what's your thought on this?
Yeah, I'm kind of more on the Yelich side of things here. I think it's really kind of coming down to a trade-off between home runs for stolen bases here. And I think in a shallower team, shallower league, I'd tend to try and get that stolen base production I'm not ruling out Yelich adding some home runs in Milwaukee still. Really small sample so far this year. And I really think he'll come back and be who he was. So, yeah, it's a tough one, though. I mean, you think about the replacement level and what's an easier thing to replace. I'm thinking that maybe Rendon, if he goes down, he actually may be a little bit easier to replace. Third base wouldn't be quite as shallow in a 10-team league. So, yeah, it's definitely close, but I kind of lean Yelich in this one.
I mean, I personally agree that third base is probably the easier of the two positions to fill, even in a 10-team league, because, you know, as we've seen, there's probably, I don't know, 15 to 16 usable third basemen in a 10-team league, and I'm sure all of us could agree to that, just based on, you know, a player like, you know, Travis Shaw, Miguel Sano, Justin Turner, players like that are at the back end of the top 10. And, you know, and then there's still players like Eugenio Suarez and Zach Cozart and players like that that will have third base eligibility and still be usable. So it's tough to say that it's not the easier position to fill. So I do agree with that.
Yeah, and I think if you're a Rendon fan here, like, I don't see anything wrong with doing this trade. And so I think part of it comes down to Yelich being a little bit younger too. It's only a year and a half difference, but, you know, 3 years down the road, I think Yelich's still in his prime, whereas Rendon's maybe starting to decline there a little bit.
All right. Well, why don't we move into the next trade, and that's going to be Xander Bogaerts, Chris Archer, Adam Eaton for Michael Conforto, Alex Bregman. This happens to be the same league because Colin and Donnie seem to trade every single player that is owned in this league, and that's why we have all these trades given to us. So why don't we start with you, Spada? What are your thoughts on this deal?
Yeah, in this one, I mean, man, Bregman is – he's just so good and so young. I mean, Archer, I'm not a huge fan of Archer, especially long term. I think we had, what is it, 6 keepers in this league. So no guarantee that Archer and Eaton are keepers. And I think Conforto definitely has a chance to be a keeper going into the next season. So from that perspective, I think I tend towards that side of it. You know, Conforto is obviously a wild card with the coming back from injury, but I still really like that upside. And 10-team league, 6 keepers, 60 total capped, I think that's where I'm leaning here.
And what are your thoughts, Colin?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Smata. I kind of like him being on the podcast as someone to agree with. But, you know, with Xander Bogaerts, with Chris Archer and Adam Eaton, it's hard to find a keeper out of those three. I mean, maybe if Xander Bogaerts bounces back kind of like he's shown the first week of the season, then yes. And then on all my other podcasts, I've said how much I hate Chris Archer. And so he's definitely not a keeper for me. Adam Eaton could be borderline as long as he stays healthy and performs how he's shown the first, you know, week and a half. But that health issue is one of the big things. And that's the same thing with Conforto, but Conforto is probably 6 to 7 years younger than Adam Eaton, and he has yet to show, you know, he has yet to get into his prime, but he's shown power, he's shown average, he just has to hit against left-handers, and he'll be a stud. And then Bregman already is a stud, he plays in one of the best offenses, so he'll have the multi-eligibility, position eligibility. So for me, it's Conforto and Bregman, and it's not close.
What are your thoughts, Donnie?
Yeah, so I mean, if I did have a man crush in fantasy baseball, it would definitely be on Michael Conforto. And yeah, like they were saying, Chris Archer, he's probably right now he's been pretty overrated.
And it's tough to decide which one he is, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on.
Depends on who you're talking to. You're talking to Colin, he's super overrated. You talk to Mike Werner, he's underrated. So, you know, it's tough to say.
Mm-hmm.
He's always giving up runs and striking people out. So I guess it depends on what you prefer. And then this was before Bogaerts got hurt. So if that plays a part in it.
For me, I mean, as a Mets fan, I can't let myself be biased. But I still think that Bregman's the best overall player out of these 5. And as much as I love Adam Eaton and Xander Bogaerts, I have to agree with Colin. It's tough to say that there's a keeper from either of them unless Bogaerts bounces back. I understand that even at Ian's best, I'm not sure if he's a top 60 overall player. I mean, it's a borderline play, but I think that there's more upside with a player like Conforto over Adam Eaton. I think that there is more upside with Alex Bregman over Xander Bogaerts by a pretty decent amount. And I'm not sure that Chris Archer, who I'm unlikely to keep in this type of format, I'm not sure if he's enough of a player to give me a push to take the extra players. I mean, if I have an empty bench spot, or if I have a really crappy last guy on my team, I guess I could consider it if I'm like trying to get depth and there's no depth out there, but it's a 10-team league, so my guess would be that there's still some favorable players out on the waiver wire, so it makes it almost easier to go with the Bregman side, seeing as how you can still probably pick up a borderline top 150 to top 200 player to go along with those two good potential keepers.
Yeah, I agree with the argument, and one of the questions I want to pose to you guys, because this, you know, this is only a 10-team league, and we play in a lot deeper leagues. So if this was a 15-team league, would your opinion still be the same, or would you lean towards filling three spots of need rather than just the two spots?
No, for me, it doesn't change it. I'd still take the Conforto and Bregman side, just because Bregman's is the better player, and Conforto is better than Ian. And I think Archer is a little bit easier to replace, even in a deeper league, just because the one thing that you're trying to replace is strikeouts, really.
What's your thoughts, Swana?
Yeah, I'm same on a 15-teamer. I mean, even in that, the one part of this trade, too, that we haven't really talked about is this is a 2-for-3. So you're giving up a bench spot, taking on that third player. You're dropping somebody. So in a 10-team team, that's obviously a bit more of an impact, but you know, even in a 15 team, like that's a spot that you can stream or do whatever you need to. I'm still more on the Bregman Conforto side. Bregman's definitely the better player overall.
My thought process for not trying to make a change in a trade only because you had more teams is because it is head to head. And I personally think that you're going to get more value in a head-to-head league with Bregman and Conforto than you are with Xander Bogaerts and Adam Eaton. And I don't think that the difference of Chris Archer is going to necessarily help propel you to enough victories in a head-to-head league. Yeah, there's a great chance that he's going to get you a lot of strikeouts, but he's still going to give up a lot of walks. He's going to give up a lot of hits. He's going to give up home runs, so his ERA is going to be up. And they're on an absolutely terrible team, so it's not like there's a lot of wins, and there's a good chance he doesn't get you an absolutely large amount of quality starts. So outside of strikeouts, I'm not really sure if there's a huge benefit to getting someone like Chris Archer, and you're still likely going to be able to grab players off the waiver wire who can give you similar stats like in a head-to-head league. If you're looking for strikeouts, you could grab someone like Nick Pivetta, and he's going to be on waiver wire in that type of league, and you know, if you don't care about the rest of the stats and it's just strikeouts, Pivetta could do it. Or I'm sure that there's other players that you could grab that are having decent years that are likely to come up, like Walker Buehler could come up at some point, or, you know, there's Tyler Molly. So there's other players that you can grab that I don't think the bigger the league. I think maybe if you got up to, like, 20 teams, then this is a bigger difference. But I think on either 14 or 16, since it's head-to-head, I don't think that makes enough of a difference. Why don't we move into the next trade, and we have yet another Ronald Acuna trade. This one we have Ronald Acuna for Wilson Contreras, Javier Baez, and Chad Green. So why don't we start with you, Colin. What are your thoughts on this trade? And just for reference, this is a 16-team Dynasty League. Or, sorry, a 15-team Dynasty League with on-base percentage and quality starts.
So I hate Javier Baez, so that kind of just points my side right to Ronald Acuna. I know I'm the Acuna guy on this podcast, but I think Smata is going to one-up me because he's. I think his love for Acuna is just about right there with me. Wilson Contreras, you know, he's probably the number two catcher right now. Chad Green is just another arm. I know it is a deeper league, so he does have some value. But for Javi Baez, he doesn't do me any good for him to be on my team. He's like Joey Gallo minus 20 home runs. So he doesn't provide me much of anything besides tanking my average and, you know, a few counting stats. Now, if I play in a defensive league and I get those snap throws, then I'll be good. But for getting Acuna, I'm going to take him in this trade. I'm just going to take the potential and hope that it pays me.
Yeah, I don't play in the leagues with Eric Carabel, so you don't have to worry about defensive run saves or anything like that. what about you, Smato? Let's go with you, because you're obviously a big prospect guy too, which is why it's great to have some other people on the show other than Donnie and myself, who just, you know, would rather not side with the prospect. It's nice to have some debate. So what are your thoughts on this trade?
Well, for some perspective from where my head's at, I took Acuna 14th overall in a startup dynasty this year.
Whoa. It was nice having you on the podcast.
yeah, and it was OBP too. So, so for me, this is nowhere close. I know in the dynasty leagues I play in, you need first-round talent to secure Acuna in a trade. And I know this is great for podcasts, but let me read off what Javier Baez has done so far this year. It's a crazy stat line. So he's walking 14%. No, that was before today. 12% of the time, which is crazy weird for Baez, right? He's at 4 home runs and 47 plate appearances. Dude's got a 205 batting average on a 436 on a 160 BABIP. Just so, like, all over the place. But yeah, it's still, I don't know. Baez, I don't know what he's going to be long term. Contreras, so he's like, he could be the best catcher in the league, minus Gary Sanchez. I just, in a dynasty, I don't like to invest heavily there. So just, there's nothing about this trade that would want me to side over there. But yeah, love me some Acuna.
Well, let me ask you and Colin a question, because this is a trade that I had been offered. So I had ended up dealing Acuna for Brian Dozier, Wellington Castillo, and Cole Hamels in the same league. What are your guys' thoughts on that? We'll go with you, Colin.
I mean, knowing your team in this league like I do, you're built to win now.
This is and a different league, but...
Oh, it is?
This is not the Big 20 team league. This is only a 15 team league. But
I just assume that's the only one that you trade in, because that's all you send me every day.
No, I trade in other leagues. I trade that heavily in many leagues. I mean, in this league, I've already made 7 trades through the first week and a half of the season. So,
and are you built to win now? Of course.
For the most part, I mean, I got players like now. I have players like Dozier, Arenado, Inciarte, I have players Machado, Rizzo, Real Muto, Carrasco, DeGrom, Weaver. So players like that. Otani.
Oh, okay. So getting Dozier back, I'm not sure about Cole Hamels this year, being the Ranger fan. I went to opening day. I didn't like what I saw. Granted, it was against the Astros, but I think, you know, he's just another arm that you might have to just play the matchups with this year. But Dozier is a borderline second, third round pick. And then who is the second guy?
Wellington Castillo, and it's a two catcher league.
So in a two catcher league, I could see that. And especially if you're trying to compete for this year. Now, of course, he's injured now, but, getting Dozier and solidifying one of your catcher spots, I think that would sway me towards that side. But like I said, on this trade that we were discussing, getting Contreras and then basically garbage after that, that's not something that I'm appealed with. What do you think about it, Smata? I'm sure you're just going to go with Acuna.
Yeah, you're not changing my mind there. yeah, I've got Dozier, and I really like Dozier, but in a dynasty again, like Dozier's 30 something. I don't have it in front of me, but yeah, I think Acuna is going to be really, really good, and I think he's going to be really good this year. I can't remember. I think it was Matt Thompson when I was like, oh, I think conservatively 15, 20. He's like, he's not going to reach either of those stats this year. I bet my life on it. And I'm like, all right. I don't know about that. But
well, I guess we can kiss Matt's life goodbye, right? and Dozier is 30. He will turn 31 in a month.
Oh, okay. There you go.
So, I mean, the only thing that was making me hold on to Acuna was that it's a five outfield league. So obviously it makes it a little bit tougher to part with someone of that nature. And I had been holding on to him for quite a long time. I had held on to him for at least a year. I think maybe a year and a half. I think I bought in once, the draft of 2016 happened, the draft right after 2016. I think I grabbed him right around then. So that's how long I had basically held on to him. So I had turned down a Josh Donaldson for a Acuna trade, and I turned it into the Dozier deal. So I thought that helped me a little bit more. So why don't we move into the next trade? And this has some keepers in it. 10 teams, 5 keepers, and I guess you move up 3 rounds for every year that you keep a player. So we have Luis Severino, who will be a 21st round keeper next year, for Starling Marte and Kyle Hendricks, neither of whom will be keepers based on their round value. So why don't we start with you, Smato? What is your thoughts on this trade?
Still on the Severino side. That round for being a keeper is insane. I think he's already better than Marte. 10 teams, I think Hendricks is almost replacement level at this point for starting pitching. So I definitely am on the Severino side.
Is it remotely close, or is it like such a big steal that, you know, it's almost like, I'm not even sure like how to come up with like a great deal, because it's obviously such like it to me it's a huge steal in the Severino side too. I was even surprised it was accepted. So
yeah, just 1 year of Marte and Hendricks. I mean, Severino, you've got him for at least what, 3, maybe even 4 more years with that 3 round advancement on the keeper. So yeah, I super steal on the Severino side.
Well, what are your thoughts, Donnie?
Yeah, I agree with what he was saying. You know, Severino, you know, he's the eighth. He's probably going to be the ace of your staff, most likely, in a 10-teamer. The 21st round's a steal. And I would say that Marte and Hendricks, like, what they are bringing to the table is basically, you know, a low ERA and steals. And I think those are statistics that are easier to replace.
You know, you'd be surprised. I think that Severino is probably this guy's third best pitcher. He has Clayton Kershaw, who he picked up in the first round, and then he had DeGrom, who was a 14th round keeper in this year's draft. So he'll be an 11th round keeper next year, which makes him still pretty great value. So this guy's pretty set on pitching for the next few years in terms of keepers, it seems. So I wish I had him. what are your thoughts, Colin?
Yeah, it's Severino in a landslide for me. I think it was just the Marte owner selling the name. And then Kyle Hendricks, like Smato was saying, he's borderline ownable. I don't think that he provides a 10-team league with anything special. I would drop him for a streamer, you know, right off the bat. And the fact that Severino is kept, like Smato was saying, for 3 to 4 years, and these guys, you know, they could potentially not even be a keeper this year, it makes this trade borderline vetoable, which I don't do, but yeah, it's Severino, and there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, like I was saying, I'm surprised that this trade got accepted in the first place, especially because it got accepted like 3 days into the season. So I don't know what would have compelled the owner who traded Severino a couple days into the season to make a trade like that, because it's not like you're out of it's not like you're out of it. And you know, I can understand if maybe there's a team that's trying to get to a championship and you're trying to get some steals or something like that, and maybe there's like some type of reasoning like deep into the season, like on the trade deadline. But 3 days into the season, it makes absolutely no sense, in my opinion, as to why you would do it. And even if you go deeper into the year, he's still a keeper for at least 4 years, in my opinion, unless he completely drops off like he did a couple of years ago when he had a tough run. But I can't possibly see what would compel any owner to give up Severino at that price tag. It just doesn't make sense. So
I think there's one argument that we're not thinking about is, what if Severino has Tommy John, you know, God forbid, knock on wood, he has Tommy John surgery this year or next year. Then, I mean, if this guy that got Marte and Hendricks wins the championship, is it worth it?
I'm still not sure. I mean, I get what you're saying, but...
Because it's a pitcher. Most of them are injury prone. I mean, just because it's a pitcher.
I mean, I get it. That's the only thing that could potentially help out the owners. If he wins a championship and Severino's out for an extended period of time with an injury. But that has to work out perfectly for both sides for it to make any sense. Like I said, this early in the season, I don't know what would have changed 3 days into the year to make you think that someone who you considered keeping and someone who you weren't willing to move during the offseason due to the keeper status, what compels you 3 days into the season to go and move that player?
Yeah, it's not even like his first start was a bomb. You know, he was dominant in his first start. So, yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, it's definitely first start wasn't great. I mean, it wasn't terrible. It was 5 2/3 innings. He gave up 4 total base runners with 7 strikeouts, and he got the win against Toronto. So, I mean, we've seen better Severino games, but it's definitely one of his better ones. So I don't know what would have made the person – I don't know what more he could have asked for from Severino in the first start playing up in Toronto on the first day of the year. I don't know what more you could have asked for. So,
How is the team on steals, though? You said Severino would be his third pitcher, so is he really low on steals?
I mean, the team that gave up Starling Marte still has Andrus, it has Freeman, Kipnis, Inciarte, Charlie Blackman, and Desmond.
Had Andrus.
Well, yes, it did.
No, the team that still had Severino.
I know. I'm just telling you one side of it. So that team obviously was able to part with some steals. The team that acquired Marte has Altuve, Gardner, Yelich, or had Yelich. they have Josh Harrison, who you can get some from, and Travis Shaw, who you'll get some from. So to me, it just didn't really make any sense. And it's not like they have – like their best starting pitcher as of right now is Steven Strasburg, followed by probably Garrett Richards. So for me, it doesn't really make a ton of sense as to why you would have weakened your pitching and added a player who I'm just not a fan of than Starling Marte for a player like Severino. Why don't we move into the last trade? And this is Garrett Cole for Rich Hill and Marcus Stroman. So, Smata, what are your thoughts on this? This is a 20-team dynasty roto.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the big part of this trade is whether you believe that Garrett Cole is different, which I'm in the camp that he is going to be different this year. I've been swayed by his start so far. You know, also in a dynasty league, I mean, Hill and Stroman coming over, I mean, is there any guarantee, like, you're making this trade for this year to win this year, getting Hill in this deal? Is there any guarantee Hill and Stroman are helping you by the end of the year? Huge injury risk on both sides. I think Garrett Cole is probably where I would go in this trade, although last year I think it may be another story.
And what are your thoughts, Colin?
It's Garrett Cole, another landslide trade. Rich Hill, I think Garrett Cole will have more innings pitched than both of these pitchers combined. Rich Hill is just going to spend too much time on the disabled list. He only goes 5 to 6 innings at a time. And then Marcus Stroman, he's going to walk too many people. He's going to, you know, give up too many runs to make it through 5 or 6 innings. I mean, his stats, once he gets out of the out of the first order, out of the first turn in the order, it just starts to dip down even more, and he doesn't even provide you any strikeouts. So I'm with Smata. I'm a believer in Cole this year. I love his potential in Houston. I love how they're using him and his pitch sequencing. So it's Gerrit Cole, and it's not close.
And what are your thoughts, Donnie?
You guys are haters. yeah, so this was a trade me and Ben did in a...
I have to keep that impartial until you and I both speak. So.
I knew it.
So it's a 20-team league. Obviously, Ben got Gerrit Cole, and I took Rich Hill and Stroman. Me and Ben are probably in the Rich Hill fan club.
I love me some Rich Hill.
As long as he doesn't get any boost.
I got him 2 years ago for like some relief pitcher, and I was like, oh, that's great value. And then I like have held on to him, and I'm like, everything I get for this guy is great because I got him for basically nothing. I got him for someone who dropped like 2 weeks later.
It's classic Donnie to trade the best player away in a deal, so that's fine.
It's a 20-team league. I go for depth. That's the best thing to do.
Like I said, is going to have more innings pitched than both of them combined.
Nah, Rich Hill's not getting any blisters this year.
Oh, that's a bold statement right there.
In Donnie's defense, Donnie didn't have significant pitching depth behind Carlos Carrasco and Gerrit Cole. His next best pitcher was Garrett Richards, and he had got both Cole and Richards for me during the offseason. So his pitching staff was pretty bleak coming into the year. It was he was giving himself depth, which I can understand, and I had a surplus of pitching that I could afford to be able to do a move like this. As much as I do love Cole, I think all four of us probably believe that Gerrit Cole is changing from what he was last year to this year just by changing pitching a different environment, using the breaking ball more. But I can't understand why someone would do this in a deep league like this that you don't have a ton of established pitching and you're trying to acquire some. I mean, I understand the age on Hill and Stroman can be up and down, but I still think that Stroman has the potential to be a top 25 starter overall in a rotisserie league. And I think that Rich Hill also has that capability. So,
and I mean, it is such a deep league. Like I talked to Ben a couple times about it. Like, there's literally guys on my bench that I've never even heard of. Like, I had to ask Ben, like, hey, who are some of these guys? Because it's that deep of a league. There's nobody to pick up, you know. And even if it's dynasty, I'm always going to play for this year, even though, you know, Ben has a stacked team and there's a couple other teams that are probably impossible to beat, but I'm still going to play for this year. You know, I've been kicked out of dynasty leagues, and we've had leagues that have fallen apart, you know, so it's always good just to play for now.
I mean, you know, it's bad when the top three best hitters are on the waiver wire, Pedro Severino, Max Stassi, and Steven Pierce. So like, there's just no depth. And the most owned pitcher in this league is Craig Stammen. I mean, I can't believe that people even... I mean, I understand Stammen's having a decent year, but I'm surprised he's even really rostered in almost 4% of leagues. Like, there's no depth. Like, this left me a player short, and I'm going through the stat lines every single day to try to find someone to add onto a team that's not worthless.
Ben, who is the person that was picked up last week for, like, 31% of their FAB?
Jordan Hicks.
Oh, yeah, that was right.
Jordan Hicks was picked up for 31% of your the FAB. I picked up Adonis Medina for 20% of my FAB, and we can thank Smata for suggesting I go such a high percentage. considering that no one else bid on either Jordan Hicks or Smata, I like how me and another owner both wasted over 20% of our season-long budget on one player each that no one else bid on.
Well, I think I have the championship belt on that. I bid on Scott Kingery for $407, so And that was out of 1,000 at the beginning of the season. So I think I got both of y'all beat.
Yeah, but at least Kingery's playing all the time. Medina's not going to play for potentially 2 years. Jordan Hicks, who knows what's going to happen because Mike Matheny's a terrible fan, terrible owner. Or, well, I hope he's not an owner, but he's a terrible manager. At least Kingery's going to play, and there's a good chance that if he has a great season, I don't expect him to beat out Acuña for a Rookie of the Year, but I guess there's a chance if he has the ability to go 15-15 and they both go 15-15. I mean, there's a chance that he could. So it's not like you made a terrible play. I think that you and I made a worse play going almost $200 for Jacob Barnes in the Invitational until you talked me off the ledge a little.
Yeah, that's true. Smata, what do you think about Kingery over Acuña for Rookie of the Year? Are you ready to punch Ben through the phone right now?
I'm a fan of Kingery, too. I've got him in the Invitational. So, yeah, I don't know. I could see Kingery going 15-15, maybe even 15-20. I mean, similar to Acuña, it just really depends on how quickly Acuña trends towards his peak. So I could definitely see it.
All right, guys, why don't we move into the last trade, and that's going to be Jacob deGrom for either Marcell Ozuna or J.D. Martinez. This is a 10-team points league. You get 12 keepers. What side would you rather, Colin?
I would rather the J.D. Martinez side for deGrom. If it's Marcell Ozuna, I'll keep deGrom. This definitely depends on my pitching staff, being that it is a points league. But with 12 keepers, all three of these players are in play. I just believe J.D. Martinez is a lot better than Marcell Ozuna, and I don't feel that Marcell Ozuna is better than Jacob deGrom. So I know that's a lot of player comparisons, but for me, J.D. Martinez playing in Boston, he hit a grand slam yesterday. I know Ozuna hit a home run today. I'm sure you're happy about that, Ben. But with Jacob deGrom, I'm going to keep him as my ace if I'm only able to get back Ozuna.
What are your thoughts, Smata?
I totally agree with Colin there. J.D. Martinez, I think, is just good enough to be over DeGrom here. Unless your pitching staff is decimated. But, totally agree with Colin on all of those comparisons.
So the fact that it's a points league doesn't really affect you guys at all? Because, obviously the top-tier pitchers are usually favored over the top tier, certain top tier hitters. So I'm a little bit surprised that given the 3 years in age difference or 2 years in age difference in the points league, I'm surprised that didn't really change either your guys' approaches.
Well, Ben, I know you're the points guru. I'm kind of a novice at points leagues, but in a startup draft, do you actually see Jacob deGrom being drafted before J.D. Martinez?
In certain aspects, I mean, in a points league, I wouldn't be surprised if someone went a Clayton Kershaw or a Max Scherzer first overall in certain, like in a keeper or dynasty points league, just because of how many points they can generate. You know, in certain leagues, a good hitter can maybe generate, let's say, 4 points on average. So maybe if they play 6 games, it's 24 points, you know, maybe 28. On a great day, a pitcher could maybe get you 25 points by himself in a one-start week. So in a two-start week, he could get you 50. You know, there's different scenarios. This is a league that I'm in for a points league. And obviously, I have a great pitching staff, so I could afford to move a player like DeGrom. But at the same point in time, because I only use 3 outfielders, and I have Conforto, Pollock, and then I rotate between Desmond Haniger and Domingo Santana. I figured that the improvement from getting a better third outfielder and hurting my pitching on a weekly basis, I felt that it didn't make sense. But I obviously could afford to do it with having players like Robbie Ray, Kershaw, and Severino on the team still.
Yeah, I think for your team, either one of these outfielders would be your outfielder one. And DeGrom is a surplus for you right now. I'd like Smata to, you know, add to his task list and make a spreadsheet for how valuable a pitcher is in a one-start week compared to an actual hitter with 6 or 7 games. So I think you're right on the dot Ben, with your comparison about points, how much they'll actually give you in a week. But I'd like to see the data behind it. I think Ozuna is probably less than DeGrom. And, of course, DeGrom will have two start weeks. But I think JD Martinez is right there with him.
And what are your thoughts, Sonny? Because I know that you have a huge man crush on JD Martinez, probably more than all of us. You probably think he's the best player in baseball.
Pretty much.
what are your thoughts exactly on this type of deal?
I mean, so Ben, do you really have Ozuna and JD Martinez in the same tier?
In a points league, no, only because I think that there's more that JD is able to do with his power over the course of a weekly head-to-head than what Ozuna can do in that lineup. I mean, and I love Ozuna. I think that he could be a dark horse candidate for MVP this year. I think he's a top 10 outfielder. I think that last year is something that he could easily duplicate. But I think that having JD in a points league is the better move. And I think that there's two separate tiers separating them.
Yes, I mean, we can basically just ignore Ozuna because, I mean, like you said, you'd rather have JD Martinez anyways. So if it's just JD Martinez for DeGrom, I mean, that's pretty close. And I think it just does come down to your roster construction. Like you were saying, you could use another outfielder. If I had to pick a side, I'd pick the DeGrom side just in points. Pitchers are worth so much, and that's something that I've kind of been learning the last few weeks on how many points they can score each outing and how it can really swing a team up into the standings.
Let's put it this way. Both taking their 2017 stats, Marcell Ozuna in this league put up 581 points for a 3.7 point per game average. JD Martinez, who obviously played in significantly less games, put up 557 points at a 4.7 points per game average. So obviously you can see what a great year from JD in a shortened season is able to do against Marcell Ozuna in a great season-long year. So I that's why in a points league I would be able to drop Ozuna. I think he's a very consistent player, and I think that if you need a player with a likely better floor and someone who's likelier to stay healthy, I think that Ozuna could be the better player. But I think since one is likely going for a championship with this type of move, you are better off going with the higher ceiling player, and that would be JD. And obviously, based on these stats, there's not a there's a pretty big difference between what the two players did last year. And just so you guys have an idea of what Jacob DeGrom did last year, Jacob DeGrom in the 200 innings that he put up 545 points for a 17.6 point per game average. So it gives you a little bit of what each player is able to do on both sides. Obviously, there will be weeks that he'll be able to beat that 17.5 points and he'll be able to put up 25, and then there will be some weeks in which he has a bad week and he may only get you 5 points. So, you know, it's a downside to having a pitcher, because if a pitcher gets tagged like Lance McCullers did yesterday, you obviously could go into the negatives. You're less likely going to the negatives unless you own Giancarlo Stanton, who strikes out 5 times a game.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Sorry, Donnie. That's a good point, especially being in a 10-team league. One of the things that I have a question on, Ben, for points leagues, is if you get JD Martinez and you have a roster spot where you can kind of maneuver a streamer pitcher, isn't the difference between JD Martinez and a streamer pitcher much better than just DeGrom?
In that instance, yes, but it's tough to say who is going to be a streamer pitcher for this year, just because of how many pitchers are taken. I personally have about 13 starters on my team because I would rather keep a bunch and force everyone else to have a worse pitching staff. So obviously you've heard my pitching staff. I also have, you know, Rich Hill, Jake Faria, McCullers, Stroman on the team, Otani on the team. You know, I have plenty of pitching, so I obviously can move a player like DeGrom, but I also like being able to hoard the pitching so that other teams are forced to have to either stream less than ideal pitchers or that they're forced to beat me with their offense, which for the most part, I think I drafted pretty well and I have a pretty good offense. Like, the best players based on last year's stats that are on the waiver wire that are starters, Jaleesa Chacin, Zach Davies, Jason Vargas, Darren Straley, CC Sabathia, Marco Estrada. So it's not like there's a lot of great players on the waiver wire. You know, all those players average less than 12 points per game, so they could have a decent game, but they're likely to be pretty average players. So it's tough to say, because most of those are matchup-based plays, it's tough to say if you have a bad matchup, who to stream to go with JD Martinez.
And is this a head-to-head points league?
It is.
Okay, yeah. So that I would also swing that towards DeGrom a little bit more, just because when he does have his big outings or two-start weeks, that definitely can carry you. And how do they – what's the innings limit?
There's no innings limit. It's just you get 12 starts per week unless it's an extended week like last week. So obviously, based on my staff, I'm able to, with the pitchers who go for two-start weeks, I could easily do that. And then this week I have, I think, one player who goes on two-start week, and that's Luis Severino. Obviously, his first start wasn't great. But then I'm able to still get, you know, decent plays out of players like Kevin Gausman or Kyle Gibson or players like that. And, you know, this is the type of league that there's high scores per week that pay out. There's high scores for the season that pay out. And so, you know, it's decent buy-in. So there's a good amount of money. So having and hoarding pitching allows me to be in the running most weeks for the highest score, the highest overall score at the end of the year. And since it is head-to-head, towards the end of the year, you know, you run into a chance where pitchers get starts that are skipped, and, you know, having more pitching than the other team can be a benefit. So that's how I see it.
So you can trade DeGrom in this league, but not the one that I'm in with you?
Well, Donnie, he's my favorite player. You make me a good offer. Let's go. I mean,
I have JD Martinez. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, you can give me JD and Carlos Carrasco. How's that?
No.
All right, guys, why don't we wrap this up? And Smata, why don't you tell us where you can be reached and what you're working on?
Yeah, Twitter at @Smata_BB. Right now, working on the invitational standings, updating that pretty much every day, and adding new tabs. FWFB is leading the pack with at least five representatives from a site, so that's pretty exciting. But other than that, I've just been looking at working on a way to figure out velocity and when an individual game is really out of line or not. Velocity seems to be pretty trendy this year. trendy topic, but a lot of talk of whether or not, you know, this game was really bad or really good or whatever. And there's statistically ways to actually determine whether it was out of line or not. So, yeah, hoping to have that up fairly soon.
If you don't mind me asking, I have noticed that a couple of times during the year that there's a team that's higher in the standings but second place in their specific league, and the team that's in first place is below them in standings. How exactly is that computed?
Well, it's because they're jumping higher in one category in the overall, more so than they're jumping up in their own league. So let's say the difference in your strikeouts is first place in your league is 100, second place is 80. That 20 strikeouts is only earning you that 1 point in your league, but in the overall standings, it's earning you a lot more. So, sorry, if that second place team has second place in the league has that 100 strikeouts. So it's kind of the differencing within the category. I think by the end of the year, those first place teams will all be at the top. But I think it's just because it's a little bit early that those differences are making a bigger difference in the overall standings.
Fair enough. Thank you for that. I know that I'm not the only person who has thought that, and I just had never gotten an answer. So that was what made the most sense to me. I just figured I'd ask. Yep. Donnie, why don't you tell us where you can be reached and what you're working on?
It's at Donnie Miller FWFB. Be working on this show with you guys every week, maybe every 2 weeks. Trying to collect trades and you know, trying to beat Ben and Colin and basically all the leagues I'm in.
That's not happening. And I don't know those two leagues.
Doesn't, no, it never happens.
And what about you, Colin? Where can you be reached and what are you working on?
You can reach me at cweatherwax13. I'm trying to do at least 2 podcasts a week. Along with this one, I do the Dirt Dogs podcast with Mike, the Rotocop, and Randy Haynes from FWFB. And then I was a guest on Coons and Friends, the Coon and Friends podcast with you, Ben, yesterday. So that's what I'm working on the offseason. I'm trying to keep up with the games along with hold a job. So I'm trying to lean towards more baseball and less job, but it's kind of got its way of, pulling me towards the job way. So, but Smata, it was great having you. Thanks for joining us. You did great on your first podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's fun.
And I can be reached at bbrennisfwfb. You can find me through the off season for fantasy basketball. Joined on the Friends of Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast with Eric Mackey. We'll occasionally have other people from Friends with Fantasy Benefits. Anyone who feels like talking basketball, which is roughly just Matt Thompson. And that's only at the draft. So we're unlikely to have anyone else on that. You can find me on the Kuhn and Friends podcast, which is our Wednesday show with Ray Kuhn. Evan Peterson will occasionally be joined by Colin Weatherwax. And you can continue to find me and Colin Weatherwax and the Wax Report at the top of the Invitational for the remainder of the season as we kick the living shit out of Smata. So.
Yeah, I think Smata has a formula in there that we're just going to stay at the top and there's nothing else that anyone can do about it.
Yeah,
that it's tough. It's tough seeing you guys at the top of the standings, not going to lie.
It must hurt you deeply, not only to see us at the top of the standings in our league that we share, but then in top, and then we were in the first place overall in the Invitational for the better part of the week, if not more. So I'm sure that pained you also. So.
Yeah, I was creeping up on you guys yesterday, too. But then, David Price gives up 4-1, and then Glasnow. Yeah, that was a great pickup. That was 4 2/3. So.
You know what? You should just stop banking on prospects.
I don't know. I think Glasnow can turn it around, but we'll see.
I hope you're right.
He'd be a great reliever when they finally realize that.
He's a reliever now.
I know, but they haven't fully realized it yet. Like, they still try to use him for extended periods of time. He's not Chris Davinsky. Just use him for, like, one inning in the seventh, and you're good. From the rest of us, the Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.